covering the latest in Toronto sports news, rumors, and predictions. This is the TSV Podcast. Here's your host, Connor Chambers.
All right, welcome to the first official episode, I guess, of the TSV Podcast. As you heard, I am your host, Connor Chambers. You can find me on Twitter at @TO_sportsviews. You can also check me out on Instagram at @TO_sportsviews and the website, torontosportsviews.com. Today's episode is about the NHL trade deadline, because that seems to be what people are talking about. Even a few days after the trade deadline's passed, there's a lot of moves that were made that are going to help contenders, that will help teams that are rebuilding. And then you can look at moves that weren't made or moves that should have been made. Toronto for a right-handed defenseman. Those moves and more will be kind of dissected in this podcast, so we're going to take a look. We will start off with our beloved Maple Leafs. I'm going to dissect Nick Petan for Par Lindholm, give my thoughts about it, and then we'll kind of look at trades that the Leafs didn't do. I thought that maybe they should have went for a right-hand defenseman. Hindsight being 20/20 with the injuries they have now, that probably would have been smart, but we'll kind of jump into that a little bit later. After we take a look at everything Toronto Maple Leafs around trade deadline, we're going to just take a look at the rest of the NHL. We'll see, you know, what our neighbors down in Boston did or what they didn't do. Take a look at the West. The West kind of got pretty stacked. Vegas, Nashville, Winnipeg beefed up, Dallas, San Jose. And then we'll take a look at the team that really went all in with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And then we'll conclude the podcast. So, leading off, Toronto Maple Leafs, Nick Petan for Par Lindholm. That was the headline move for Wonder Boy Kyle Dubas and company. Did Leafs fans really expect a massive move to be had at the trade deadline? I certainly didn't, but I can understand and see, especially on Twitter, that a lot of fans thought that there should have been a move made at the trade deadline that was a lot more significant than Nick Petan for Par Lindholm. I get it. It's not the most flashy move, but I do like this trade for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Nick Petan really caught my attention when he played for the World Juniors. I believe in his final year of playing for them, he played for 2 years. In his final year of playing, I want to say that in 7 games, he had about 12 points. His offensive upside has always been there. He's been a point per game in the AHL, which is the same mark that our beloved Andreas Johnsson had in the AHL at that same age. Nick Petan is 23. Par Lindholm is 27. Again, not a flashy move, but an improvement is an improvement. And at any rate, if you can bolster up the fourth line, if you can add a little bit of scoring and add more depth, which we're having depth tested right now on defense, and we realize how important it is. If you can add depth, you go for it. So not really too much to dissect here. Just I think that Nick Petan is a upgrade. He will be an RFA at the end of the year. So we'll have to see what our numbers guys will have to give him for a contract. I don't expect, obviously, for it to be an enormous contract. He hasn't really shown much in the NHL level. But like Kyle Dubas said, he thinks that Petan just wasn't really given the opportunity to showcase his offensive skills, his offensive upside in Winnipeg, and he thinks that he can do better here. I would tend to agree. Nick Petan kind of got caught in that fourth line role. Right now, that's where he would start. But if you're going to have to ship out bodies to make room for guys like Marner, for William Nylander, John Tavares, Austin Matthews, some guys are going to have to come out of this lineup, and some players that are making veterans minimums or minimum contracts on RFA deals, they're going to have to step up. And I see Nick Petan as a player that could do that for this team. So that's kind of really it for that trade. Nothing really else to say. Par Lindholm, you had one goal for us in 61 games. Congratulations. We'll play you a tribute video next time you're here, something like that. Anyways, Leafs, defense. Now, we've seen post-trade deadline that the Leafs, their depth on defense has been tested. So Jake Gardner goes down with an injury, back spasms week to week. Travis Dermott takes an awful hit in the blowout of an Edmonton Oilers game. I really don't know what Toronto's going to do. It's not like in basketball where the trade deadline passes and you can still pick up a veteran from the waiver wire afterwards that you can add to make a playoff run and the veteran buyouts and stuff like that. That's not the way it works in hockey. I wish it did because it would make things a lot easier. But for the Leafs, they're kind of in some trouble because Marinson is not an NHL D-man. He is an awful defenseman. I cannot stand him. And as much as I hate on Jake Gardner is an NHL defenseman. He knows how to play defense in the NHL. If you're relying on Justin Hole to be your guy to come in here and make an impact, it's not going to work. The depth, the NHL ready depth for defense in this team is poor. And with two regular defensemen being out, Dermott now a month and Gardner week to week, you're in a bit of trouble. Thank God for the addition of Jake Muzzin a month ago. Because if Jake Muzzin was not on this team and that move was not made, they would be in serious trouble. If Babcock played Muzzin better, I think that would be great, but he doesn't utilize him as much. I really don't understand why. I really don't know what his fascination is with putting Muzzin as like a third line bottom defense pairing. I don't get it, but that's why they pay Babcock money, and that's why I sit here and make podcasts. So I can't really bitch and complain too much. A couple of Kyle Dubas quotes that really kind of caught my attention. Trade deadline. He said the following. He said, quote, this was after the moves had been made. He said, quote, especially on a day like today, you feel like lots of things are imminent. We had a lot of discussions on a lot of different things, and in the end, we deferred to what would make sense. We've got a lot of belief in our team and our people in there already. When you start building a team to play only one team in the playoffs, you start to lose your way a little bit and lose what you're about. Time will judge whether that's the right way to do it. I kind of put like two, three separate quotes together just because he had said, talked about certain things, but there's a lot that is in those quotes. He's got a lot of belief in the team and the people in there already, meaning that he didn't want to sacrifice depth for AKA rental players. But now your depth is being tested. And if you really believe in your team, now's the time to see if your belief was just false prophecy. Does this team have what it takes to even stay afloat right now and allow Jake Gardner, allow Travis Dermott to get back healthy, have a few games under them, regular season games, and then come back to be positive contributors in the playoffs? If I see Martin Marinson dressing for the Toronto Maple Leafs in an NHL playoff game, I will probably jump off my roof. I'm serious. I can't envision it. It actually makes me sick. All right. The Leafs really should have addressed the need for a right-hand defenseman, especially if they knew that Jake Gardner was going to be out week to week, because this kind of happened a day or two after the deadline, and he was already a healthy scratch for unknown reasons before the deadline came up. So this issue's lingering from, what was it, January? So you're going to sit here and tell me that the front office didn't know? Of course they knew. Which is why it kind of baffles me a little bit to say, all right, not Adam McQuaid per se, but why did you not get that insurance, another depth defenseman that's NHL proven, to come in the event that Jake Gardner sits out week to week, a month? God forbid we lose a guy like Travis Dermott for a month. It's just 101. You want to make a push for this team for the Stanley Cup, but you're starting guys like Justin Hole and Martin Marinson. I believe in Justin Hole. I think that he could be an NHL defenseman one day, but not today. Team as currently constructed, will they make it out of the East? I don't think so. But you never know. NHL playoffs are a different beast. Some teams step up, some teams choke. The fact that we have some players from the Marlies that won the Calder Cup makes me more positive about the outlook, but I don't know really what will happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs if and when they face Boston, if and when, or if at this point, if they face Tampa. Speaking of Boston, that's kind of where I want to go to next, because now I want to start to take a look at the rest of the NHL here. So Boston, I guess we'll look at more of what they didn't do at the deadline, but they started out a day or two before the deadline. They picked up Charlie Coyle from the Wild for Ryan Donato and a 2019 conditional fifth round pick. And at the deadline, they got Marcus Johansson from the Devils for 2019 second round pick and a 2024. Two things. One, I like the Charlie Coyle move for them. I think it fits the style that the Bruins play. A good, bigger body, physical, but can give you some offense, give you some points. Donato, I don't think, was ever really going to reach his full potential with the Bruins. So I like the cost for them here. Donato in a fifth conditional is good. The Marcus Johansson move, though, that one doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know exactly where he's going to slot into this lineup. And for a guy like Marcus Johansson, I think that his cost is just way too high. You know, especially for a rental, I think this cost is way too high. Guys like Gustav Nyquist, Matt Zuccarello, they were basically going for that price. And they were much better players. Much better players than Marcus Johansson. I am not a Marcus Johansson fan. So to me, as a Leafs fan, it was nice to see the Bruins kind of not land a bigger piece like Stone or Duchesne. Guys who would make immediate impacts for them and could really make them challenge Tampa. Speaking of Mark Stone, I'm going to take this over to Vegas. So, Vegas acquired Mark Stone from the Senators for defenseman prospect Eric Brandstrom, Oscar Lindberg, and a 2020 second round pick, with reports that Mark Stone will sign an 8-year contract extension at $9.5 million salary per season. If and when this extension comes through, this is a steal for Vegas. Has to be. There's no other way of looking at it. Brandstrom is a solid piece to get back for Ottawa. He's a great prospect. If he pans out to what he should be, Brandstrom and Chabot will actually be a very lethal defensive pairing for years. Granted that the Senators want to give money to Chabot when he's a free agent. You never know. But for a player like Stone here, you know, Ottawa needs more. They need him more. Not getting a first-round pick should have been a non-starter for me. If you're not getting a first-round pick, I'm hanging up the phone. Yes, Brandstrom, great prospect. But you need more. A player like Stone, that is an elite forward player in the league. He is clutch. He can score goals. He gives you grit. Grit meaning like he will play physical. He's not going to be a pussy on the ice. Not only did Vegas get Stone for this playoff run, they have him for 8 more seasons. This is not a rental. The Vegas GM George McPhee, he does this shit all the time. He finds a way to get these rentals, and then he extends them. He did this with Pacioretty, did this with Mark Stone. This is how he's building up his team. And he has all these assets that he got from the expansion draft to do so. But George McPhee had a really interesting quote about Mark Stone, and I don't have it up, but so I'm going to kind of speak in hypotheticals, but he said something along the lines of, with a player like Mark Stone, with that elite type of player, those trades are rare to find in the NHL. If you're a team, you draft this type of player and you keep him on your team for his entire career. And that was basically the quote. Massive shot, massive dig at the Senators and Pierre Dorion. Like, not only did I just steal you of a player, I'm going to fucking slam the door on your face on the way out. You're going to need some plastic surgery for the damage I've just done to you. I love it. I love it. I love it. Nothing like, thanks for giving me your best player, best forward player that you've probably had since Alfredson. Thanks for that. And oh, by the way, you and your franchise are a fucking joke. Oh, my God. And just think, 2 years ago, Sens fans were making fun of Leafs fans because Sens made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. and the Leafs didn't. And now look at you. You're going to lose Jack Hughes to the Avalanche. Pierre Dorion, executive of the year. On to Nashville. I'm sick of talking about Ottawa. It makes me sick to my stomach. Nashville, they made two good moves that I really like. First move, they acquired Michael Granlund from the Wild for Kevin Fiala, 1-for-1 deal. I think that this is a win-win trade for both teams. Granlund, he fits into the Preds' sort of window of contention, per se. You know, he's 27. But he still has a decent cap hit next year. It's $5.75 million. So that's kind of your trade-off right there. It's like if you wanted to go after somebody in free agency, that limits your options. But he's still a good player. Granlund is still a very good player. Fiala is a very good young player. I think he's about 22 years old. You know, Wild can sort of build around him. His caveat, though, is he's an RFA at the end of this year. Obviously, Wild have the negotiating rights to get him, and he won't leave. But now the Wild front office are going to have to find the number to keep him under. And that's really what's going to be interesting. What do they sign Fiala at? Because if they get him at a good number, I think it's a win for Minnesota as well. If they get him at a number that's pretty outrageous, then I think it's not as good of a trade because you've given up a proven guy in Granlund for a younger guy. But saying that, the Wild are one of the oldest teams in the league. Anytime you can get a good young player that you can control, it's a win for your franchise. So that's that. Second trade Nashville did. They acquired Wayne Simmonds from the Philadelphia Flyers for Ryan Hartman. Conditional 2020 fourth round pick. And all those people say on paper it's a win for the Preds. You know, they got Wayne Simmonds. They only gave up Ryan Hartman in a fourth. But what did Nashville give up for Ryan Hartman at the trade deadline last year? They gave up, among other things, a 2018 first round pick to the Blackhawks. Blackhawks then used that first round pick. They selected a left hand defenseman by the name of Nicholas Beaudin out of Drummondville. And he's averaging more than a point per game as a D-man for them this year. That could have been a nice little piece for Nashville to add for a trade package to get somebody better than Wayne Simmonds. So Nashville gave up a lot for Hartman. So even though people are saying, yeah, Hartman and a fourth, they still gave up a lot for him. Saying that, though, Simmonds definitely helps out a Preds team who's looking to make a serious run in the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. Is Simmonds better than Ryan Hartman right now? Yes. I like the move for Nashville. I like the move. I don't know if I really like the move for the Flyers. Like, Ryan Hartman can be what Wayne Simmonds might have been in his prime, potentially. But I don't really think that he will be. It's more like a top nine forward, fourth round pick that probably might not be anything. So we'll see. I still like this trade for Nashville. I just think that the Hartman trade in itself, and what happened with it in the full circle, the full picture, it's kind of a stain on the legacy of David Poile. He didn't really do much for you while he was with the team. You gave up a lot to get him, and then you kind of sell low on him. It's not a great look, but oh well. The thing that I think motivated Nashville to get deals done throughout the day was the start of the day, where Winnipeg landed arguably one of the biggest names out there in Kevin Hayes, where they acquired him from the Rangers for Brandon Lemieux, 2019 first round pick, and a 2022 conditional fourth. So of all the fits for a team and their deadline acquisitions, I think that this one makes the most sense. The Jets, they needed a second line center badly. You know, Brian Little was playing second line center. They haven't been able to fill that hole since Stastny left to Vegas. So this kind of allows Little to slide back into his third line center role, which I think he's better suited for. Kevin Hayes, a tough player. He's got skill. He can give you the play in the corners. He's really good with his stick. He's able to free the puck off of defenders really well. I think it's a great move for the Jets. Like I said, basically kick-started trade deadline. Made teams like Nashville look and say, oh, fuck. What are we going to do? How are we going to combat this? We're going to need a stronger guy, too. We're going to have to go out and get Wayne Simmonds. We're going to have to fill the need at center. We're going to need to go get Michael Granlund. Jets also got Nathan Beaulieu from the Sabres for a 6th-round pick. It was actually a good depth D move. especially if Morrissey is going to be out for an extended period of time, which it looks like he will be. And then they also got Mac Hendricks, which I'm not even going to talk about because that's a joke. On to Dallas. And I actually feel awful for the Stars here because they had, if Matt Zuccarello was healthy at this time of recording, I would say that they had probably the steal of the trade deadline, where they acquire Matt Zuccarello from the Rangers for a conditional 2019 second round pick and a conditional 2020 third round pick. Again, I thought it was going to be a steal of the draft until he blocked a shot and is out for a month. He was having a great game too. He had, what, a goal and an assist through half the game, then broken whatever hand, something, out for a month. If he's back by the time the playoffs start, if he gets a couple games under his legs, he's back by the time the playoffs start, this could be a massive win for the Stars. And they're just going to have to learn how to stay afloat without him. And I mean, that's probably not going to be anything new because the Dallas Stars didn't take away anything from their roster. They didn't trade a roster player to get him. So they're just going to have to find a way to tread water until he comes back. San Jose is another team that I really liked on trade deadline day. You got Gustav Nyquist from the Red Wings for a 2019 second round pick and a conditional 2020 third round pick. No, I didn't just loop what I said from the acquisition of Matt Zuccarello. It was the exact same acquisition price. Dallas did their move before San Jose. So people were saying that Detroit sold low on Gustav Nyquist, but I think that the Rangers actually screwed over the Red Wings here, because the Rangers sold low on Matt Zuccarello. Matt Zuccarello is a better player than Gustav Nyquist, in my opinion. Someone might argue against it. I think that Matt Zuccarello, overall, his entire game is better than Gustav Nyquist. The Red Wings didn't really have a choice on what they were going to ask for. It was set in stone. If you wanted a player of that caliber, because they are pretty similar, if you want a player of that talent, it's going to cost you a second-round pick this year and a conditional third next year. And that was the market set price. Good job for San Jose to jump on this. I think it's a smart move for them. He was having a nice bounce-back season in Detroit. Already has more points this year than he did last year. And there's still 20 more games to go. So good for him. I'm happy. And I'm happy for San Jose. They can finally break their playoff curse, which, or playoff slump, playoff drought, whatever, of not winning a cup, not having success. I don't even know if they will, because they match up currently against Vegas in the first round. And that might be the most interesting first round matchup out of all of them, besides maybe Toronto-Boston. That might be the most interesting and exciting first round matchup. And I hope that it stays that way, because that's really what I want to see. Finally, I want to go to the team that pushed all in, that said, we are winning the Stanley Cup in the 2018-19 NHL season, and that is the Columbus Blue Jackets. They started out by acquiring Matt Duchene and Julius Bergman from the Senators for Vitaly Abramov. I don't even fucking know if that's right. Jonathan Davidson, a 2019 or 2020 first round pick, and a conditional first round pick. Pretty steep price for a guy like Matt Duchene, especially since Mark Stone didn't get a first, he got a second. You get two firsts for Matt Duchene, you don't get a first for Mark Stone. I know the prospects weren't nearly as good, but I don't know the logic. Anyways, I'm done with the Senators. But I'm not, because the Columbus Blue Jackets acquired Ryan Dzingel from the Senators, what, a day later? And a 2019 seventh round pick from them for Anthony Duclair, a 2020 second round pick, and a 2021 second round pick. On trade deadline day, they went out and got Keith Kincaid from the Devils for a 2022 fifth round pick, and they acquired Adam McQuaid from the Rangers for Julius Bergman. That's right, the guy that was included in the Duchene trade. 2019 fourth round pick and a 2019 seventh round pick. Jarmo Kekalainen is really out here throwing around draft picks like it's like he's fucking Oprah. You get a pick, and you get a pick, and you all get, everybody gets a pick. For the year 2019, going into the 2019 NHL entry draft, the Blue Jackets have only their third round pick and Calgary's seventh round pick. That is it. Their third and Calgary's seventh. They have two draft picks. One of them's not even their own. They have one own draft pick in the third round for the entire 2019 draft. That is the definition of all in. They could easily lose first round to the defending Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals, a repeat of last year's first round. And if that happens, and Artemi Panarin says, I'm not staying here, and Sergei Bobrovsky says, I'm not staying here, and Matt Duchene says, I'm not staying here, then you are in a shithole, Jarmo. You are in a bad spot. You better find a way to get some draft picks back. Otherwise, you might as well just give up your seat at the draft table. Why would you even come? Why would you even show up? You should just give your seat to a Make-A-Wish kid. You want to be an NHL GM for a day? Here, take my seat at the draft table because I'm not going to do anything. Here, you want a suit? Here, take a suit, sit by the phone. I don't care. I won't be there. I'm going to be on a beach. Anyways, I don't know why I'm getting more fired up about other teams compared to the Leafs, but, you know, there's just some things as an NHL fan that I look and I say, how do some people like Pierre Dorion have a job? How are they employed? How are they making money? I don't know. But again, that's why they get paid. And that's why I sit here and talk to you on a microphone. That's going to kind of conclude it for this episode. I really don't know how long I've been on here. Next episode, we have the one, the only, Adam Corsair of South of the Six is going to stop by. We're going to talk all things Toronto Raptors. Switch it up on here, have a little bit of a different tune. So we're going to talk all things Toronto Raptors. That's going to take up most of our podcast. We're going to sprinkle in some Blue Jays and MLB talk near the end. In my introductory podcast, I said, you know, maybe Bryce Harper might sign. I'm like Nostradamus out here because he did. 13 years, $330 million with the Philadelphia Phillies makes him the highest paid athlete in North American professional sports history. We freak out when John Tavares gets $11 million a season. Some players out here, Nolan Arenado, is making $32.5 million. Kids, if you're going to pick a sport to play, play baseball. I promise you. So that's going to wrap it up for me. I want to say thank you guys very much. Stay tuned for next week where I'm going to bring on the first guest of my podcast ever, Adam Corsair, South of the Six. Check out his social media at South of the Six on Twitter. You can see him on any of the major podcasts because this guy's becoming massively famous now. So it's an honor to have him on my podcast. Take a look. He's basically everywhere doing everything Raptors and Blue Jays across all the big boys. So it's good news for him. It's good news for me. It's good news for everybody who likes Toronto sports because now you get more diverse opinions and podcasts. So on that note, I'm going to say thank you guys very much. Hope you enjoyed my little rant, my analysis of what the Leafs did and didn't do, as well as the rest of the NHL. And yeah, I hope that you guys stick around for next week's episode. If you liked this episode, please, please do me the solid of subscribing on whatever podcast platform you are listening to. Give a 5-star review. Leave a comment if you want me to include something, if you want me to take something out. Any feedback's greatly appreciated. And I will catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening. You can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at @TO_sportsviews. You can also listen to our previous podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and more. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review if you enjoyed the content and click that subscribe button. See you next time.